This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconex. Uconex is the premier provider of managed and in-house servicing in the biddable media space. If you're looking for true transparency with paid social, PPC, or programmatic, or are a brand or agency looking into in-housing your team, connect with Uconex today. Visit them at uconex.com. And Tumi. Tumi provides luxury without limits. I've got the bag. I've got the backpack. If you're a business traveler, nothing lets you roll in style like Tumi. And finally, No Kid Hungry. We are incredibly proud to make a contribution to No Kid Hungry in the name of each of our 2019 guests. Stop by NoKidHungry.org today to contribute and help kids be kids, not be hungry.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the CMO Suite. I am your host, Sean Halter. We were here just a few weeks ago. We called it Legends Week, and I'm calling this week Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll because we just talked to somebody.
So much more fun.
It is. It is so much more fun. I mean, Legends Week is fine, isn't it? But Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, that's what this is all about, right? We've got with us Gail Troberman. Gail is the Executive Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer for iHeartRadio, Inc. First of all, thank you, Gail, for joining us.
Oh, happy to be here.
And thank you to iHeart for hosting us. I am a previous iHeart employee. I was with iHeart for many years, and they are incredibly kind and gracious to allow us to utilize the studios here for the podcast. And we wanted to have you on. And so we chased a few of the people down that we know in the building, and we said, hey, can you see if Gail will be on the show? And somehow we got you to say yes.
Amazing. Yeah. When you're recording here in our offices, it makes it even easier.
Well, it not only is it a courtesy, right? But it's supposed to bring all this full circle. I think we felt like before we reached out and asked if you could be on the show, we better figure out what the heck we were doing in the first place. Am I correct?
We'll see.
Wow. No pressure, Gail. No pressure. Jeez, if only I had had some of that tap ranch before
this,
I came
like episode,
in.
Episode 10.
We're in season two where I got this. I'm not completely uncomfortable at this point. Gail, talk to us a little bit. I was fascinated. I had worked at iHeartRadio, I guess maybe 15 or almost 20 years ago now. I was in radio sales. Bud Paxson owned it at the time. I was telling somebody here that story. Bud Paxson was like this old Florida, you know, guy. He owned radio and he owned some TV stuff. And then he sold to these Clear Channel fellas out of Texas. And I remember we were sitting in the office. They told us all to come in. Jenny Sue Rhodes was the general manager at the time. And they were like, we're getting bought out. And everybody was like, oh, you know, these groans came on. They started this video up. And I'm going to soliloquy for a second just because I know you've been with, how long have you been with iHeart now? Three or four years?
About 4 years.
So what was interesting back then was everybody was kind of groaning because all of this acquisition stuff was happening kind of in the space. And they had this video of Lowry Mays. And they had been buying so much, so fast that they would just overdub his voice because they kept, you know, so it was Lowry and he'd be like, we own 675 radio stations, like a bad, you know, Chinese karate movie or something, because they just kept overdubbing the number. But eventually they really built an empire up, and they were, to me, one of the first that really were always ahead of the game and realizing that this industry is changing and it's changing fast. And so even that transition to iHeart, you know, I remember at the time people just saying like, what in the world are these guys doing? They have this brand in Clear Channel. I don't understand what they're doing, but they have always really been precursors to that. And I'm
that's
assuming
kind of how I ended up here.
I was going to say, I'm assuming to some extent
Bob
that's how you ended up over here.
I was between gigs and trying to take some summer time to figure out what I wanted to do with my life after Microsoft. And Bob called me one day, Bob Pittman, who is the CEO of iHeartMedia now. And he said, I have this kind of crazy idea. I'm thinking about rebranding the company from Clear Channel to iHeartMedia. And, you know, he's like, what do you think? And we talked about it for a little bit. And, you know, he was like, what are you doing today? I was like, I was going to go on a hike. And
what
you know.
Did you think? I mean, because again, to my point and kind of starting the show off, you know, there were a lot of us who had either come through or others outside who were like, well, what are you guys doing? And so you were at the heart of that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's always a massive decision to rebrand anything, right? Because equity is equity, even if you need very often to redefine what a brand means. Usually my gut instinct is, it's easier to redefine than to change because you've already got awareness. So now you have to change up what people think of that brand. But in this case, there was this massive momentum in digital and streaming. They'd already introduced the iHeartRadio brand, which just had crazy, it was one of the fastest growing consumer brands in media ever. Awareness, positive perceptions with consumers for the iHeartRadio brand was massive. It's the brand for our events business. It was the brand for our digital and streaming app. So there was already a lot of new momentum and energy around this idea of iHeart. And Clear Channel came with lots of legacy. a company that had been around and, you know, had played hardball business for a long time. And in the ad industry, we played around with the trade-offs, but it felt like a moment where audio was having a renaissance and a new brand was going to signal and denote the company of the future, right? The digitally driven company that was going to reinvent what audio was versus the radio company or the radio and outdoor company of the past.
And that must have felt...
That was the signal.
To you, pretty exciting. You know, you used the word renaissance to some extent. And again, this business, radio, once you've got it in your blood, it's hard to kind of get it out, and you don't want to. You know, some of the best relationships that I still have to this day, probably my absolute best friends that I have forever, are friends that came from my time in radio. It's a very incestuous business to some extent. Everybody knows everybody. It's that 3 degrees of Kevin Bacon or whatever. There is that in this business to some extent. But at the same time, for somebody who had a background like yours, and I want to make sure we hit on that for a little bit, it must have felt really interesting to have him say, what do you think about this? And it probably was one of those things where you were like, I never would have thought that's where I would have ended up.
Sure. Yeah, I've learned in my career to never rule anything out. Most of my career has been a lot about what I would call sort of intentional stumbling.
So seizing
great opportunities when they present themselves.
And Microsoft was a stop for you for quite a while.
Yes, I had what I'd call probably 3 different careers at Microsoft. Early digital marketing before in the mid 90s when the internet was a brand new thing.
What's a thing?
Everything
right?
had to be learned. Then I created the kind of first branded content team on the internet. It was an amazing ride. And in my last gig at Microsoft, I was chief creative officer, and I was sort of running all the advertising for the company. None of those I had any right to have, those jobs, but I learned as we did.
And, it's easy to say that, yeah. But it sounds like, again, obviously you've managed to be a good precursor or a good indicator or understanding of what's coming next, and there's tons of value in that, and you don't get to where you are without having obviously a legacy yourself. So did you grow up here in the city?
No, I grew up in Rhode Island.
And so what brought you here to
Crime
New
Town.
York?
Yeah.
What did you call it?
Crime Town.
Crime Town.
Podcast references, yeah. I got to New York after college. You know, I wanted to get into advertising. I always thought I'd be a creative or copywriter, kind of always drawn to that side of the business. And so I took one of those sort of crappy entry-level jobs, as you do out of college.
That was radio for me. You know, we had a guy who came to college and he said, how many of you are thinking of starting an advertising agency? And I think everybody raised their hand. And he said, how many of you want to get a job in radio? And nobody raised a hand.
Yeah.
But he said,
now advertising's having some of those issues too.
Yeah,
and what do people want to study today?
Well, and that's probably, you see it in your space. It's something that's ready to be transformed. It's already in the thick of transforming, whether agencies realize that or not. And there's a lot of them that are standing around going, what's going on in this industry? It's those that have already started that transition to some extent to bring a full circle back to iHeart. You know, iHeart was, again, a big precursor to what was happening in the legacy space of radio and jumping on many of these things early on. Certainly, to your point, being part of that early stage development of the iHeart brand, it's what's allowed iHeart to continue to elevate itself up, at least from my perspective.
Yeah, totally. You know, I think at iHeart, it's one of the things I loved when, you know, Bob called me that day and he made a decision that
night.
You know him? And then I met Bob through the industry, and some jobs I'd been doing here, some agency work. And, what I loved about and still love about iHeart I think the radio industry all up, and now we're bringing that to digital and streaming and podcasts, is it's a live, always on medium. It's unscripted, it's messy, it's real, it's human, right? It's, 850 plus stations right now live on the air. And what's happening? What are they talking about? What's going on a talk station, a country station, a pop station, right? We're everything right now live on air from, the Breakfast Club to the, smallest, political talk show right now. And when you work in a business that's that alive and of the moment and of its audience, you learn there's only so many things you can control. And as opposed to working at a giant corporation like Microsoft, the ability to make decisions fast, get a little bit of data, take a leap, and then learn is one of the things that I think really distinguishes iHeart, both on the advertising side of the business and the programming side of the business. It's that ability to learn real time with your clients, with your consumers, with your listeners. And you can tell in the digital world, right away what's working, what's not, what people are reacting and responding to. So all of that months of pre-planning type approach that traditional marketing companies take, and the kind of
throws some of it out the window a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of the great things that's happened to advertising. It's also one of the challenges.
So podcasting, we'll spend a little bit of time on that. I won't spend too much time on it because obviously I talk about it all the damn time. You know, I have a full-time normal job, by the way, people. This is not my normal full-time job, but I'm at a point in my life and at my age where I've been able to somehow take my whole trajectory. I started at Nickelodeon. I was a game show host, so we can play some Nickelodeon games in a little bit.
I love it.
Then took a turn through iHeart and then got into the agency business. And so it's been a weird, podcasting has been a way to take all of those pieces and pull them together. And I think when the thought came out of doing a podcast, I'd seen agencies that did it and I thought they were doing it wrong. I felt like they were spending too much time talking about them. You'll probably feel the same way when we're done here. But they weren't thinking about the guests. And most people don't care about me. They care about the guests. They care about people like you and finding out who's impacted your life and how you got in the space that you are and what your thoughts are. It's so much more interesting than just talking about your agency or anything else. So to that point, that's one of the uniquenesses about podcasting themselves, is that it can be whatever you want it to be. Mm-hmm. And niche is okay. It's okay to have a show where you have 400 passionate listeners if those are the 400 passionate listeners that you want to talk to and are interested in your content.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think podcasting is just, it's a terrific example of where, you know, the internet kind of presented all these opportunities for niche content, right? You could have the most obscure passion and you could go find the other 10 people who have that same obscure passion and you could connect and share. And podcasts has taken that kind of to the next level, I think, of connection and storytelling. What we love at iHeart is we just surpassed NPR to be the sort of number one podcast company in the world.
I know you have a new guy who's not new, but tell me the name of the guy who's running kind of your podcast division.
Connell Byrne from How Stuff Works. We acquired How Stuff Works, which was an amazing company early on.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot there.
No. Love Connell. We spent a lot of time together.
And is he out of Atlanta?
Yeah, How Stuff Works was one of the early big scale players in podcasting. We acquired them a few months ago and bundled, you know, all of the titles they had into all of the titles iHeart had. And so now we have this massive sort of rocket ship of podcasting, which is, as an advertiser, as a marketer, I think it's one of the most exciting platforms for advertising since the internet, right? Well, all the same questions we asked about digital advertising tens of years ago now, we have to ask again about audio advertising, and podcasts and smart speakers seem to be sort of the new catalyst for how does your brand sound? What stories do you have a right to tell? Do you need a few niche listeners? Do you want mass awareness quickly? How can you target? How can you measure? How can you leverage the data of these different niche audiences? And the iHeart advantage in podcasting is we have millions of niches that bubble up to the single largest podcasting platform for advertisers in the world.
And when you think about it from an advertising standpoint, again, when I was in radio sales, it was always business to consumer. That's where you had to kind of focus. And maybe we had a news channel and you'd sell a little bit of some business to business, but that wasn't the core part of it. Mm-hmm. The amazingness of this space, of this podcasting space, is it's opened up to me. You know, I still wish I was in radio sales to some extent, mm-hmm. because it opens up an entirely massive category that's just been desperate for opportunities mm-hmm. to be able to talk to other people that are in their business, mm-hmm. Either about their brands or just staying in front of them, to have an opportunity just to have a platform that you could do that in. It used to be magazines, you know, and now it's audio all over again. And that's,
yeah, what I love about, you know, all of the interest and the momentum in the podcast space, we have so many brands who are starting in podcasts and now coming to us, and one of our distinct opportunities as iHeart is, for an advertiser, we can do what we call a podcast to broadcast model. So basically, we can find the right podcast audiences for you, or we can create a branded podcast with you and the stories you uniquely want to tell. We can insert those into other appropriate programming. We can create a bespoke podcast for a brand. We've got some great examples of those. But then we can take the content from that podcast, turn that into 30s or 60s, and put that on broadcast radio, where you can reach 9 out of 10 Americans. So if you're trying to sell a car or soda or introduce a new brand or a campaign idea or product, you now have a platform that can scale. So that investment in podcasting doesn't need to stay niche. It can actually become the core of a very effective scaled marketing plan.
And the beauty of that, to some extent, is the fact that you don't have to have a radio background. you know, we built that for this show in essence because we didn't know it was out there or available. And I can tell you that it works. This is not meant to be a sales pitch for you guys specifically, but
that's okay. Keep going.
But we'll take it, Gail, right? The question I probably get asked by more CMOs when we're on a pitch or we're having a conversation, first is about the podcast because they're all interested in it. And second, how do you do it? Mm-hmm. And then they all want one to some extent. But I think the beauty of what you guys can bring to the table sometimes is the understanding of how to make it work. Mm-hmm. And for people who've never been in the business or maybe haven't done the business or maybe aren't totally comfortable in the business, it's maybe perhaps, again, giving them some guidance on these are some do's and some don'ts, and certainly no better team than yours to do that. Are you spending some of your specific time kind of in that space? Is that where you're finding all of your, your passion?
I spend a ton of my time sort of consulting with a lot of, you know, the biggest brands and the fastest growing brands in the world and kind of figuring out how they figure out their sound strategy. And so that's leveraging all our platforms from how does your brand sound to what stories do you tell, which platforms, how do you leverage radio, how do you leverage our on-air personalities, how do you think about getting into the podcast space.
Will you give us some free tips after the show, Gail?
Oh, totally.
Can we go to
Atlanta? No shortage of tips.
Listen, I'm not a sales pitch on our side, but we love the iHeart brand.
Yeah, it's been one of the most fun parts of this job is really learning audio at a moment where it's just got so much wind at its back.
And it's okay to fail. I think that was a point that you'd said earlier. You know, if you 100%. Listen to when we first decided we were going to do this, you know, the first couple episodes, we didn't know what the heck we were going to do. So, I mean, we did 7-minute interviews because it had been forever since I'd been on radio. So when people say, oh, let me hear a show, I'm like, don't listen to season one. Start listening to season two. We finally kind of caught our stride with that to some extent. But a season is also whatever you want to make of it.
Totally.
And that's, again, the beauty of this business.
Yeah, some interviews I'm sure could go, you know, an hour, and some maybe there's 20 good minutes, and that's okay. What I love about podcasts is their flexibility. Audio all up is just such a flexible medium.
What did you just call the last? Did you say audio all up? Is that what you just said? Audio all up.
Yeah, like audio, digital, you know, streaming, broadcast radio. Audio is so much more flexible than video, right? I remember planning TV production.
We never should have started shooting on video, Philip. For the love of God, just the editing alone on this.
Exactly. I mean, you know, you think about advertising, you know, locations and casting and wardrobe and, you know, edits and shoots and trying to get to that one perfect cut. I mean, you know, when I was at Microsoft, you could take a big global brand, right, Windows, and we'd be shooting something like maybe 6 TV spots for an entire campaign for 31 countries.
That's insane.
And you know what I could tell you? Like, that home that we were trying to make look like 31 countries didn't look right for anyone, right? Nothing was exactly right. But if I said to you in audio, I said, hey, picture yourself at home with the kids last night.
You're there.
You're there. And it's perfectly, exactly right for each and every listener with zero production budget.
We all spend our time in our cars anyway, to some extent, whether you're traveling or whatever it is. And to your point, just about production budget, you know, we're in iHeart's Red Studio in New York City, but you don't have to be, you know, you can take a podcast on the road for $400 these days, you know. It's content, though, back to your point, to put a little bit of a button on it. Sure. If you could take a couple pieces of content from that, that's what's amazing. You know, we've asked a few of our guests, we've been shocked in some ways, the guests we've been able to secure for this show. I think we were pretty lucky early on that we had a couple of ringers, some people that we knew that were like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And we had some people that we've been chasing as an agency for years, and we were finally like, well, I don't know, let's see if they'll be on the podcast. And you'd almost hear from them almost instantaneously.
Marketers like to be heard. Consistent rule. Yeah.
Why did you say yes to us? Did somebody say they're shooting in the Red Studio anyway? You might as well walk upstairs.
Yeah, you came highly recommended from some friends.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Who's got me completely pegged, completely wrong, Gail? So talking about people and kind of making either a recommendation, and I'll need to thank those people off the air, whoever they were. Obviously, you've had some people along the way who've impacted your life. Who do you think is one of those? Who's somebody that you feel like has really made an impact in your life and your trajectory? You seem happy. I mean, you hope that you are in this business, right? When you talk about podcasting, you light up. You can see that because we have video now. But you can tell there's a real passion about that. It can't be faked.
Yeah.
And so there must be parts of podcasting that you absolutely love. And so who do you feel like has helped guide you down this path to some extent, or maybe somebody who's had some great advice for you along the way?
Sure.
I don't want to bury the lead. I've been told that already. Don't bury the lead. That was advice I got from somebody in a podcast. I was talking to somebody about their kids and they were like, you know, they were literally on the verge of tears. And here I was like, oh, I better change the subject. They're going to start crying. I felt bad. They were like, you know,
no,
my kids
are
this. And then literally I said it to a buddy of mine over at Ad Age. He's like, Sean, you just buried the lead. I was like, they were going to cry. He's like, that's heaven. I was like, I don't want to make people cry. This isn't a crying show.
Rename it to CMO
Confessional. There's no crying in podcasting.
Yeah, there's lots.
Apparently so. I won't make you cry today, Gail, yes, but maybe
hopefully
the
not.
Yeah. The next time around. Yeah. But who's been somebody that's given you great advice along the way?
Sure. You know, I think there's been a couple
of
amazing.
Can we play like the violin music here to some extent? Yeah. We don't have that available? Okay, it's fine.
Insert
next time.
The reel of my life.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, my wife, Sue, has been an amazing influence in my life all up. She left Wall Street to go teach and follow her passion. And then one of the things I learned from her, and I remember, you know, I actually remember every year I would go to the Cannes Lion Festival. And whatever job I end up in, for some reason, there's some reason to go to that ridiculousness in Cannes. And every year, the Cannes Lion Festival would start the week school would end. My wife was teaching. We lived in Seattle. And so it would be, she'd come with me and be like, great, like beginning of the summer, kickoff to summer as a teacher, freedom, right? And I'd be like, oh my God, I've got a morning panel with Ryan Seacrest at like 6 a.m. And blah, you know, and I'd be like running from meeting to meeting and just be like, oh, and I'm
meanwhile,
in this
she's
beautiful
at Cannes,
location.
Hanging out.
Yeah, she's hanging at the beach, hanging with clients, having rosé. You know, and one day I just realized, like, you know, we'd gone for like years when I was at Microsoft to this. A friend of mine, an advertising reporter, actually calls Sue the most popular teacher in advertising. And so she would have this amazing week. And I would just be like exhausted and cranky and miserable and just like running home to change and get back. And one year I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do Cannes like Sue. So
can
I'll show
like
up where
Sue.
I need to be.
If we take nothing else out of here, that's
exactly.
What we need to do. We need to do
I was
like so.
But it was an amazingly pivotal moment, you know, well beyond Cannes, where I just realized instead of stressing about how late I'm going to be for the next meeting, that I don't have my notes, all the things that were, you know, going to make this day hellacious, I would just focus on being here in the moment. And that is sort of Sue's special power. And it's really professionally become something that I try very hard to live by. What's blowing up in my inbox right now, I'm not worried about. I'm here having this conversation with you. I'm going to enjoy this conversation. I'm going to bring all of me to this conversation. And I'll deal with my inbox in, you know, 20 minutes or so. And living in the moment is so important. It's really the only thing we have. And it's how we control the flow of our day and our energy.
It's hard for all of us, especially mm-hmm. in this space, to do just that because we are so connected. And I think we're all learning that sometimes you have to can like Sue. So that's a new hashtag.
It's can like Sue. That's
C-A-A-N though.
Yeah, see t-shirts. Yeah.
Listen, look on Etsy. You know, at some point in summertime, we're all going to start canning like Sue. But
yeah, there's another mentor in my life who passed away a couple of years ago who was also entirely different than me. We had very different strengths, and we worked together briefly at Microsoft. She was here running this startup, was called Sidewalk way back when. It was my first job at Microsoft. It was the first local city guide on the internet, and she was just this amazing, like, Harvard Business School genius, just, like, New Yorker, born, raised, just this, like, ball of, like, focused energy. And she became a mentor to me through the years. And, you know, it was
similar. What was her name? Do you mind sharing that?
Chella Irvine. Yeah.
Chella Irvine?
Yeah. Yeah. Spectacular. She had been at About.com and Digitas and, you know, a bunch of...
And what was it about her that you really felt inspired by her or that she became such a great mentor to you?
You know, for me, I think the things I learned from Chella, very similarly, be your authentic self. She was about as different from the average Microsoft engineer in the mid-90s as you could get. You know, she was a New Yorker. She would get on the earliest versions of like a Skype call and start showing things from a sample sale from a designer. And all these Microsoft guys would be sitting there in their khakis going, huh?
What is
right?
she doing?
And I'd be like, wow. And I, you know, my first instinct was, whoa, you can't do that here. And what I learned was, no, be who you are in every situation. Bring your form of genius, your form of humor. Bring yourself to that situation and people will react well. Everyone may not love that. Everyone may not get it, but you'll learn who does get you and who your allies are and how to tell your stories. And amazing things will come from that. And where you don't vibe, you'll find you don't probably want to be there.
And so, that's what brings you back to your authentic self.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's a thing.
Similar lessons.
You feel like your parents tell you that, but you're too young to kind of really get it at the time because you're probably like, mom or dad, you know, I need these people to like me or whatever. But that's a great lesson in life. Be you. Mm-hmm. And let the world adapt around you, because the moment you stop doing that, the moment you're trying to conform to everybody else, is the moment you lose yourself.
Yeah.
And in this world, at this pace, you can't do it.
Yeah, you know, it's, I worked with another fabulous friend and mentor at Microsoft in the advertising space. She kind of punctuated that thought once for me. She had a great way of just simplifying messages. And she said, you know, we were debating, we were a little angry about something we didn't agree on. And she just looked at me one day and she said, Gail, there's only ever two choices, laugh or run. And that has stayed with me for decades now, and it is still truth.
Well, I'm going to continue to try to, I feel like I'm taking the other one, but I'm going to follow the laughter again. Listen, it's Gail Troberman, CMO for iHeartRadio. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the show. If you want to find out more about Gail, you can head over to her LinkedIn page, stalk her there a little bit. That's what I do. Find a friend in iHeart who apparently must say nice things from time to time. And listen, we thank you so much for coming upstairs and joining us for the show.
Terrific. Thanks for having me.
How was this for you?
Oh, it was a great time.
Fairly painless.
Entirely painless.
We'd love to have you back again
at
some point and talk a little bit more. You know, again, the beauty of these is that you can go a little longer sometimes, and we hope we'll get a chance in a follow-up season to do the same.
Terrific. We'd love that.
Can like Sue.
Can like Sue.
Hashtag.
Exactly.
Thank you very much. Take us out of the show.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO suite. Podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. Uconnect provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnects today for a free demo. Uconnects, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.